is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Michael Yon, locals.com/Michael Yon, to watch his reporting. He is in Vilnius, the capital of Lithuania, and the Baltic states along the Russian Federation frontier. Not far from Michael is the Belarus frontier. Belarus led by the dictator Lukashenko, who has brutalized his own people and treated the virus as something that you can answer with a sauna and vodka. This man is not rational to our understanding. However, over these last weeks, Michael has discovered that Lukashenko and Belarus are weaponizing migrants. We have two headlines in these last days to illustrate. In the Washington Post, the AP report from Vilnius by Ludas Dapkus: illegal border crossings into Lithuania passed 3,000. Lithuania's Border Guard Service said it detained 171 people caught illegally crossing from Belarus into Lithuania on these last days, the largest number in any single day, 2021, and bringing the total number of migrants to past 3,000. In addition, a fresh headline that points to the dangers implicit in this border crossing. This is the Radio Free Europe, Radio Free Liberty. Lukashenko orders probe after claiming Iraqi migrant died near Lithuanian border. Alexander Lukashenko, the dictator, has ordered an investigation into the alleged death of an Iraqi man near Belarus's increasingly tense border with Lithuania. The latest move in a brewing crisis at the EU's previously porous border with the increasingly isolated post-Soviet state. Michael, you began with an investigation of the border between Belarus and Lithuania, and you learned from authorities in Vilnius that the problem was growing weeks ago. Well, it's now reached international proportions, and this Iraqi man, in other headlines, is said to have been murdered. I'm looking at the Moscow Times saying, murdered Iraqi man. Maybe it's in dispute, maybe not. But we can suppose he was following the same pathway that others you've met with in these last weeks have followed. Iraqi, Michael, where did he come from? What is our supposition? Why was an Iraqi in the woods at Belarus headed to Lithuania? Good evening to you, Michael.
Good evening from Vilnius. And update on those numbers. Yesterday, I think you said 172 in the last few days or week. Yesterday it was about 300, and that came straight from the police when I was in a meeting with them. So yesterday was, you know, it's really increasing the numbers of migrants, about 300 just yesterday. So where are they coming from? You might recall a couple of weeks ago I told you they were doing about three flights a week from Iraq. Not about three flights. It was three flights a week. And so they were coming from Baghdad. Now they've increased the number. Then they increased the number to six flights a week, and now they've just increased it more, but nobody knew how many yesterday, as of yesterday. And so now they're coming not just from Baghdad, they're coming from four Iraqi cities. They're coming from Baghdad, they're coming from Basra in the south, and they're coming from Erbil, and I don't know the other city where they're coming from in Iraq, but four cities, I was told by the Lithuanian authorities yesterday. So the numbers are surging. Right now, the Lithuanians are, it's riveting the population here. There's been protests in the streets, that not in the streets of Vilnius, but in villages, that people are some have been arrested. They've had to pop tear gas grenades. You know, it's causing friction with the Lithuanians here. And they're not anti-migrant per se, actually. In 2015, the Lithuanians were clearly on the migrant side, actually. But they also are very concerned. This is a country of 2.8 million people, which is about the size of Chicago, right? And so they, and also the Vice Minister of Foreign Affairs told me in a meeting a few weeks ago that they welcome Hong Kongers. For instance, they'll help Hong Kongers get over here. You know, but those are people that won't need, you know, tremendous help, and many of them speak English, that sort of thing. But many of the people, you ask who is coming over. The ones coming from Iraq, I've talked with tons of them. Many are Kurdish. Many are Arabs from different parts. I've spoken with some from Basra. Keep in mind, I spent 2 years in Iraq, all over that place, so I'm familiar with the places where they came from. Some are from Basra. Some are, and as I said earlier, they're opening direct flights from Basra to Minsk. And some are from Baghdad. Others are from Diyala province. I haven't met any from Anbar. Many are from Nineveh. The ones from Nineveh province tend to be either Arabs from Mosul or Yazidis from Sinjar area. And I've been out, I spent almost a year in Mosul, and I was out in Sinjar quite a lot, which is Nineveh province up there in the north. And I was out with Yazidis a lot in their villages. I really like Yazidis. I was out there in their villages without weapons, without soldiers. It was just me. I would go into Yazidi villages, and as soon as they realized, you know, I would get surrounded. As soon as they realized I'm an American, they're like, oh, let's go eat lunch, you know, and we would talk all day, hours and hours and hours. They'd tell me about their lives and tell me about the war with Iran before. And I like the Yazidi people. I used to tell our pilots.
You met a Yazidi family in these last days, Michael, in one of the camps established by the Lithuanian authorities. A very clean looking, straightforward camp being administered with food and medicines for people who have made the journey from Iraq. This Yazidi family told you that they'd paid $6,000 per seat to fly the father, the mother, and the child to Minsk. And then they were driven to near the border, a half-hour walk there in Lithuania. But they were told that once they're in Lithuania, they could stay. What are the facts, Michael?
The Yazidi guy that you're talking about is 23 years old. He's got a son that's about two. And we talked for about an hour in German. He speaks German. He doesn't speak English. My German is fluent. He lived in Hanover when he was younger because of, you know, years before the problems in Iraq. And then when Iraq started to get peaceful, he headed back to Iraq. And there was another Yazidi there who had lived in, I think, Dusseldorf is what he said. And they had both gone back to Iraq because when it got peaceful. And now that, you know, ISIS and the Turks are after them, they want to, I mean, they've got an honest asylum claim. You know, most of the migrants I meet are just economic migrants. They're looking for a better life. I get that, but they're not running from a war. But the Yazidis are straight up running from extermination. And so the Yazidi that I talked with, he paid $6,000 each for his wife and his about two-year-old son and himself, so $18,000. And now, you know, all the migrants that I've spoken with from Nigeria, Cameroon, many of the Arabs, Chechens. Actually, I met a Chechen whose German was fluent. We talked for a long time. They keep the Chechens separate, actually, because they don't mix well with anybody. And they say if you get a group of Chechens more than six, they become like a different animal, you know. So they keep them separate. And so all the migrants thought that they were just going to pass through. Now, you've got the whole ecosystem coming to usher them through. For instance, the Organization of Immigration and Migration. I see them in Panama, I see them in Colombia, I see them in the United States. The whole ecosystem is here. In other words, it's not just migrants showing up because Lukashenko from Belarus is pumping them through. That's not the whole story. A bigger part of the story is OIM, the Organization of Immigration and Migration, has advertisements on Facebook. We were looking at them a couple days ago. They just put a video out yesterday that's saying, go to Lithuania. You can see it online. Just look up OIM in Lithuania and you'll see the video. So they're advertising for them to come here. So the numbers are going to pick up dramatically. Again, they just went from three flights a day to six flights a week, and now they're increasing that.
Michael, you've also reported that there are people from Africa, from East Africa, West Africa, from Central Africa flowing through this same pathway to Minsk and then across the border. They're not coming from Iraq. Is there an explanation what their city of origin is, the Africans?
Yes. For instance, one Nigerian, she's messaging me today. Her English is quite good. I made her memorize my email address, so she found a way to message. She flew straight from Nigeria to Turkey and from Turkey to Minsk. And again, like the rest of them, they didn't realize they were going to get stuck in Lithuania. They thought they were just going to cross the border, get on a bus, head through Poland, and show up. Most of them want to go to Germany. And, you know, once you get through Poland, then you're in Germany, right? So, but they're not. So they're quite surprised when they get caught here, and they're like, okay, when can we leave? And the Lithuanian authorities are going, okay, we'll pay for you to go back. I've seen them telling them this. We'll pay for you to go back, and we'll pay you about 300 euros, and you can go back today, or not today, but you put your name on the list, and you'll go back in a few days, right? But nobody wants to go back to their country of origin. They all want to go forward. And so the Lithuanian authorities then tell them, the chances of you getting asylum are practically zero. The EU has decided, you know, they're not going to do the same thing that they did in 2015. You're going to get sent back. But right now you can leave with no criminal record. But if you stay and you decide to stay, we're going to charge you for illegally crossing our border. And then you'll be deported as actually a criminal. We know you're not a criminal. The Lithuanians keep telling them that. And we actually have a heart for you, because, you know, the Lithuanians have lived under a thumb themselves. And so they clearly have a heart for them, but they're also overwhelmed.
Are there migrants in Vilnius now, Michael? Because you've said that there is very minimal security at these holding camps, and people with or without passports can leave or come back. Do you see migrants in downtown Vilnius?
Most of the ones I talk with in Vilnius say that they're students and that sort of thing. For instance, I see quite a few Indians, and I always walk up to them and say namaste, and we start talking, you know, and I see some Africans and we talk. And many say that they're students. The migrants now realize if, and they are warned, once you get picked up by the Lithuanian border police and you're put into the camp, if you leave, you're going to go to prison. Right now, when you're in the camps, you are not a prisoner, but you can't leave. Well, and, you know, of course, the migrants are saying that makes us prisoners. But
do they have their passports? Do they have their iPhones, Michael?
Okay, that's been a point of contention on the phones. Now, and I talked with the police about that yesterday. Some of them have their phones and some of them don't. The phones were taken away from them at some camps, but now when I went out there with the minister of, chairman of defense, he told them, and some others that I've seen, government officials said, give them their phones back. And actually a police chief yesterday asked me my opinion, based on, because he knows I'm seeing these things in Morocco and Greece and everywhere else, he asked my opinion if I thought they should have their phones back, and I said yes, because I think most of them need to communicate with their families, and I think it's much better for them to be able to communicate with everybody, and so they're getting their phones back.
To your knowledge, Michael, are the flights from Iraq continuing? To the knowledge of the Vilnius authorities, do they believe there are more migrants coming into Minsk?
Clearly. And in fact, one of the officers told me yesterday that the EU, and I haven't seen this report, maybe it's in the news, the EU has threatened the carrier, I don't know who the carrier is, that they won't be able to fly. Whoever's doing the shuttling between Iraq and Minsk, they're not going to be able to fly into the EU. I don't know who it is. It might be in the news.
And a detail, Michael, about the migrants. To be returned to Iraq is dangerous. To be returned to Turkey or to be returned to Nigeria is not dangerous at this point, my understanding. But what about their money, Michael? Who got their money? What do they think? Who did they pay?
Different stories, different people, and different people are telling me different prices. For instance, some of the Nigerians will say, oh, I paid $4,000. Another one's $5,000. Another one's saying $1,000. And you heard the Yazidi man say $6,000.
But they paid smugglers, right? These are human traffickers who they paid, not airlines.
Right. So they paid, for instance, the ones who are leaving Baghdad, they paid there. For instance, the Yazidi man said he paid in Baghdad, right?
Right.
And then once he got to Minsk, he still had to pay some minor stuff. And the next thing you know, once you get to Minsk, you're almost there, really. So it's really just a flight from Baghdad to Minsk. And then they stay in a hotel for a day or two, three sometimes, and then they get, some of them take taxis and others get picked up. They all say we get picked up at nighttime in a bus or a van and they drop us off by the border.
The Belarus authorities. This is the beginning of a story that has not been solved by the EU. So we're not going to solve it because there's more of the great migration waiting for Michael in Central America. When we come back, we're headed to what we understand is going on at the Darien Gap between Colombia and Panama. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.